Welcome back to the third hour of the Rob O'Donnell Show here on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. It is 509, 83 degrees on this Tuesday, August 5th, 2025. Let's see, hopefully your day is done. Hopefully you're on your way home, figuring out what you're going to do for dinner. Are the kids going to be there at the table? And make it a point to a couple times a week if you can. I know sports are starting and the summer programs for sports and the conditioning and all that, but make it count. Have as many meals, sit-down meals with your family as you can. Put the phones aside, shut the TV off, maybe a little radio in the background, but nothing crazy, and discuss their day. Discuss your day. Let them know what's going on. See what's happening in their life, what they're looking forward to, what their concerns are. Do they have any anxieties? Do they have any success stories to tell you for the day? If not, find something they did and make it a success story. So something to think about today. Make sure you have those plans and make it a priority. Those meals truly do count in the long run down the road. So this next story is coming out of New York City, but you're going to get the picture on what kind of misguided systems these are that are allowed to flourish, especially in government. New York City education officials, this is for one school, mind you. New York City education officials forked over $745,000 in taxpayer money to one restaurant over the past year. And this is coming through the city comptroller. Big Apple education officials funneled $745,000, $750,000, to a single Caribbean restaurant in Brooklyn over the past year, with numerous orders for jerk chicken and other cultural favorites blowing past spending limits, officials said. Now listen, jerk chicken, especially in these communities, is phenomenal. Don't get me wrong, I love it myself. But spending $750,000 to purchase it on the taxpayer dime, maybe not so much. Some of the $618,000 of the Department of Education's massive tab was racked up on orders from one middle school, a single middle school, to Fusion East, an East New York eatery that's in a program that steers business towards minority and women-owned shops, officials said. So New York City has a program that steers business for government entities like this one middle school to steer business towards a minority and women-owned shop. And in this case, the shop is owned by a gentleman, and we're going to get to who this gentleman is and who he's connected to in a minute. Now, mind you, this is how government works. This is just a story out of New York City, but you could drop this into Scranton, you could drop this anywhere, and you'll get the picture. Because it's our tax dollars, right? Fusion East's, that's the name of this restaurant's, politically connected owner, Andrew Walcott, insisted Monday that his food and service is worth the loyalty from the Department of Education. That's not really the Department of Education. It's this one middle school. Though he claimed the middle school tried to stiff him after he helped bail them out on a time of need, he's trying to downplay that they have a cozy relationship here. He got all his money. Controller Brad Lander's office raised the alarm about the hefty spending earlier this year, asking the Department of Education about the shocking figures, according to a May 30th letter obtained by The Post, where the story is coming from. About $1.17 million has been spent since 2022, nearly $750,000 this past year alone at this single restaurant, according to the controller's numbers. Several occasions, there were invoices signed by the principal at the Brownsville School that blew past what the city officials are allowed to spend on catering, city officials said. Now, first of all, how can a school principal, how do they have a budget for catering to begin with? Don't they have school lunch programs? Don't they have, that built into what schools do, especially public schools? When over $500,000 in taxpayer money goes to a single restaurant, and lack of mayoral oversight over city agencies like the Department of Education is glaring, the city controller spokesman said in a statement. The $750,000 wasted on unallowable catering could have made a huge difference for teachers and students who pay for school supplies out of pocket. Now, you would think, right? The Department of Education only spent about $5,300 in 2022 at Fusion East. So in 2022, just over $5,000 at this one restaurant. And again, why is a school purchasing food from a restaurant on the taxpayer's dime? But $5,000, $5,300, not that much. $750,000. But here's how this goes. Listen to this. In 2022, they only spent $5,300. The number skyrocketed the following year to $81,000, according to the May correspondence from the controller. The figure then jumped to $470,000 before reaching the new amount in 2025 of $750,000. So here, let's test the waters, right? Here's the way this goes. Let's test the waters in 2022. $5,300? Oh, no one said anything. All right, let's get a little crazy here. $81,000 the next year. No one said anything. All right. Almost $500,000. 2024. No one said anything. Let's go out. $750,000 in 2025. Oh, the New York City Comptroller is now saying something. The Department of Education claimed the May 30th letter that the spike in spending is aligned with the effort to flow more funds to minority and women-owned businesses that is pushed by Mayor Eric Adams. I thought the Department of Education's job was to educate the children in New York City, right? Or anywhere there's a Department of Education, school districts, right? That's their job, educate children. Not justify a spike in spending to align with efforts to flow funds to minority and women-owned businesses. That's not the school district's job to supplement any business, nonetheless, women and minority businesses over other businesses. You're picking and choosing winners and losers. Starting to sound familiar. Fusion East has been an approved vendor in the program for the Department of Education for about 8 years, predating the Adams administration. Okay, so for 8 years, you mean to tell me that you're picking winners and losers? They have to be minority or women-owned businesses first. Now, the owner of this restaurant said that the Department of Education's top item was a $5 special that can include a protein like jerk chicken and sides. The orders go towards daily staff meals, student lunches, and school events. Again, shouldn't the staff be getting their own meals? And shouldn't we be providing student meals to begin with, not buying them from a local restaurant that's a for-profit business that happens to be politically connected? It's definitely one of the more popular items for school, he said, that $5 special. And he's trying to stress, this is only a $5 special. Okay, I don't care if it was a $1 special. You're spending $750,000 on them for the 1 year. And that's not what schools should be doing. He says he serves on the mayor's, this is the owner of the restaurant now, serves on the mayor's Small Business Advisory Commission and Veterans Advisory Board, because he's a veteran, and also serves on the Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce Executive Board. But the restaurateur denied his civic involvement has anything to do with his restaurant's big payday. All right, so let me get this straight. They spent $5,300 1 year, 2022. Then $81,000, then $500,000, then $750,000. And you just happen to be on the mayor's Small Business Advisory Council, work for the Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce as executive board. Yeah, of course, it has nothing to do with your civic environment, but no one else got this money. Just you, your store. So again, here's a government entity picking a favorite entrepreneur who has a restaurant and filtering money that way that should be going to our kids. And again, this is New York City, but you guys get the picture on how this works, right? He says there's no political connection. You earn it the old-fashioned way by opening, said the restaurateur, who's now opening a second spot in Brownsville. Well, after what? Almost $1.5 million in taxpayer dollars that should have went to our schools. Yeah, I bet you're opening a second spot. Now that this money's probably being cut off, let's see if you can sustain both. The DO admitted that it's in a back and forth with the city controller's office, that the Brownsville Collaborative violated guidelines, and as a result, here you go. Now, mind you, $5,300 in 2022, $81,000 in 2023, $500,000 in 2024, and $750,000 in 2025 to this one restaurant for staff and student meals. What happens now? Now that it's been, the whistle's been blown, the city controller said, this is, you can't do this. Well, the DOE admitted that they violated guidelines, and as a result, the staff in the buildings will undergo training. Fiscal responsibility is a priority for the Adams administration, which doesn't oversee the Department of Education, by the way. And as soon as we are notified of this imprudent spending, we took steps to ensure it doesn't happen again by implementing the necessary training for this school, the Department of Education said. So what happens? What? $1.5 million that should have been better spent educating children, providing for the children, not buying meals from a preferred vendor to enrich them who's connected politically? They have to go to training so they don't do it again. The Department of Education in a statement said financial responsibility is critical to the New York City public schools, and we work closely with the controller's office to respond to these concerns. No non-contracted procurement rules were violated. Critically, it is incorrect to say that Brownsville Collaborative MS has been the primary solicitor of the company's services. They implemented a necessary corrective action within the school, including a leadership team and administrative staff procurement training. So school administrator and leadership staff just has to go to training on purchasing stuff in the future. Department says it's looking into the Fusion owner's complaint of waiting months to get paid and commit to making sure vendors are paid in a timely manner. This is just disgusting. It's just outrageous. But they've enriched this vendor so much, he's opening a second spot. So I guess there's that. Look around you in your local government. Are you seeing similar patterns? Because I do. And again, nothing is wrong here as far as they're concerned. The city controller's involved in this, the Department of Education. Well, they didn't really do anything wrong, but it's because you brought it to light now, we're going to send them for retraining on how to better do this. $1.5 million in 3 years. And again, you could see the test the waters. $5,300, $81,000, $500,000, $750,000. If this was not caught, next year it would be $1 million. But I'm glad they got their retraining there at the Department of Education. And unfortunately, the kids of this middle school, this one middle school, I hope they enjoyed their jerk chicken for $1.5 million over 3 years. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show here on WILK News Radio. Got a text message. And every Friday night, we have a big family dinner at our house. In-laws, brothers, sisters. It's been going on for a good 25 years. I love that. I think more people should do that. I appreciate you for sharing that with us. That's great. I wish my kids were closer to where we could do that. But when we do visit, we do as much as we can, and we do have make it a point to have the holidays there. I would imagine that this is going to turn a lot of you off from visiting Denmark. And I don't know if Denmark was on your to-do list or plans for vacation, but listen, I'll read it out to you. The Denmark Zoo wants people to donate their small pets as food for its predators. Yeah, that's not a joke. Now, there is the caveat to this, as I read into the story, because I first read the headline. I was like, that's disgusting. A lot of the small pets in Denmark are farm-type animals. So they're not really – they don't say dogs and cats and stuff like that. But, I mean, you read the headline, and Denmark Zoo wants people to donate their small pets as food for its predators. And then they got a picture of a lion stalking something, and it doesn't show what it's stalking. It was kind of a turnoff right from the start. The zoo in northern Denmark is trying to mimic the natural food chain of its predators it houses, including lions and tigers, by feeding them small donated pets. Now, this zoo is asked for donations of healthy animals that need to be given away for various reasons, and again, including guinea pigs, pigs, rabbits, chickens, for this purpose. And I get what they're trying to do. But usually zoos have a procurement process to do that on their own, and it's usually deceased animals that they kind of tie to a string or mimic to be still alive so they can sort of hunt it. So I'm thankful in the story it didn't say anything about dogs and cats and our common pets. But and you have to realize in Denmark, probably this area of Denmark, there's a lot of more non-traditional animals that people may have around the house, you know, farms that they just can't upkeep anymore and, you know, things that they probably use for food to begin with on their own. So as the headline, again, you have to read past the headlines in these stories, a lot of them. And this is one of them, because you read the headlines and it was like, what? You can cross Denmark off my list. But when you read into the story, it's not as controversial as it's made to seem. And that's probably why the headline's what it is, because it got me interested. And here I am talking to you about it. And it says, in zoos, we have a responsibility to imitate the natural food chain of animals in terms of both animal welfare and professional integrity, it added. So, again, not as bad as it first sounded. And the zoo also says that owners eligible for a tax deduction for donating their pets. Nothing goes to waste. We ensure natural behavior, nutrition, and well-being of our predators, the zoo wrote on its request for this. It houses three carnivorous and dangerous species in its cages, Asiatic lions, polar bears, and Sumerian tigers, per their website. So did that turn you off to want to go to Denmark? After reading the story, it's not so bad. It's 5:31 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. So move over, Mickey Mouse. TripAdvisor has named the top amusement park in the United States. And it's not Disney or Universal. No, it's not Hershey. It's not Knoebels. In its 2025 Traveler's Choice Award, what do you think it is, huh? Dollywood was named the number one in the best of the best amusement and water park category. If you've ever been there, it's really a nice place. But this kind of took me by surprise. The Appalachia Theme Park, co-founded by the legend Dolly Parton, bested Disney World, Magic Kingdom, Disneyland, Universal Studios this year. Dollywood is located in the Great Smoky Mountains of Pigeon Ford, Tennessee. Features rides, adjoining water park, and museum showcasing Parton's costumes and memorabilia. This isn't the first time Dollywood, which opened in 1986, had landed the number one spot. According to the Knoxville News Centennial, Dollywood has earned the top spot three times in 4 years. TripAdvisor also named it one of the top 25 amusement parks in the world at number 11. And it's the only park in North America that made it to the top 15 on the international list. It's the only park in North America to make it in the top 15 on the international list. That's got a lot to say here. It's not hard to get to. It's easy drive. There are plenty of places to stay outside the park. This award is humbling, Dollywood president said in a statement, because it's derived from a real review left by actual guests describing their time here in the parks and resorts. Dollywood was also named America's favorite theme park by the National Amusement Park Historical Association in May for the third year in a row. Disney World's Magic Kingdom came in second place, and Knoebels Amusement Park in Pennsylvania ranked third. The ranking by TripAdvisor is based on above and beyond reviews and opinions from the site's community over 12 months, website said, adding that out of 8 million listings, fewer than 1% achieved this milestone. So listen, not for nothing, Dollywood, and then we have Knoebels hitting number 3 in Pennsylvania. We got some winners here. And if you've never been to Dollywood and you got children, even if you don't have children, listen, who doesn't like a good amusement park? Head down there. We were actually, it's funny because how I ended up there is we were in Disney World for 2 weeks and they were going to get hit with a hurricane until our second week that we were there. It was right after I moved here. So it had to be 2004. So we went down, I just retired, and I said, you know, we always went down to Disney World and it was a rush. We were more tired when we came back than we got there. It wasn't a vacation, to say the least. So our kids, our girls were real small. They were 1 and 2. Our son was 6 or 7. So we decided to go down to Disney for 2 weeks. You know, take it easy, relax, spend some time at the hotel pool, then go to the park, wait a day or two, go to the park again. Not this, you know, try and get everything in 5, 6 days. But a hurricane was moving in, so we ended up leaving Florida early, traveling north. And because the hurricane was going to come up the coast, we came inland, which brought us to Tennessee for our ride home because we drove down to Florida. You know, family of 5, cheapest way to go is drive. So we ended up staying in Pigeon Forge right outside of Dollywood. And it was quite a time. So interesting that they both made the list, but Dollywood number 1. Again, it's not hard to get to. A day's drive if you want to drive all day. And a good time down there. It's 5:41 here at WILK. Time for 2020 traffic and weather together. I'm not going to interrupt it, Jake. Nope. Not going to get it from me. Mm-hmm. That's right. Day's almost over. Got to let everybody have a good time with it. To each his own. Somebody wants to rock on their way home. I'm not going to interrupt it. No, I'm not. Hopefully you have the top down, windows open. Don't let anybody get in your way, because they will regret it. Thanks for sticking with us. Start with to wind down the show here. It's just about 5:45 here, 83 degrees outside. Somebody said, Dollywood is like Knoebels meets Great Adventure. Yes, indeed it is. Indeed it is. And listen, we have a lot of great gems here as far as amusement parks. Listen, Hershey Park is severely underrated for a lot of people. I enjoy it. It's one of my favorite parks to go to. What's the one up in Erie? I'll think of it. It's got all the cool roller coasters, but that's a good time up there as well. I'm just not a roller coaster person anymore. Doctor kind of warns me against stuff like that. So, but there's plenty of Knoebels. Listen, a perfect hidden gem right then and there that most of us have grew up with. You know what's funny? My wife and kids have been to Knoebels dozens of times. I've never been there, not once. I was always working when they went, either in the summertime or school trips or stuff like that. So we'll have to check it out. And when they have the office day here at Knoebels, which they just had a week or two ago, I'm on the air. It's from 12 o'clock on. How am I supposed to partake in that? Can't leave you guys. So Boeing fighter jet workers. And again, Boeing's broken down into different segments, and this is the fighter jet workers. Go on strike after rejecting a contract offer with pay raises. More than 3,200 union members who assemble Boeing's fighter jets in St. Louis, Missouri, area, and Illinois went on strike on Monday after rejecting a second contract offer the previous day. Boeing Defense said it was ready for the work stoppage and will implement a contingency plan that uses non-labor workers. According to the company, the rejected 4-year contract would have raised the average wage by roughly 40%. Now, again, that's not just their wages. That's their wage and benefits in the entire package, which included a 20% general wage increase and a $5,000 ratification bonus. Thing is, bonuses aren't often pensionable, so it doesn't affect their pension at all. which is why a lot of companies go to ratification bonuses. New York City did it with us with the NYPD and our municipal contracts. It's a way for them to get around things. It also included increasing periodic raises, more vacation and sick leave. We're disappointed our employees in St. Louis rejected the offer that featured a 40% average wage growth. You know how the company says, average wage growth, not average wage increases. Boeing vice president and general manager said in a statement, the offer was largely the same as the first offer that was overwhelmingly rejected 1 week earlier. Well, what did they think was going to change? Their union did say that they should, their union leadership said that they should approve the contract, but the workers said, no, we're not going to take it. Members of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, District 837, deserve a contract that reflects their skills, dedication, and the critical role they play in our nation's defense. District 837 head Tom Bowling said in a statement. Boeing CEO Kelly Ortberg downplayed the impact of the strike when talking to analysts on Tuesday about the second quarter earnings, noting that the company had weathered a seven-week strike last year by District 751 members and would build who build commercial jets in the Northwest and number 33,000 employees. Again, there's different, they call them districts, but unions that do different things. Their District 751 does commercial jets. This union does fighter jets. I wouldn't be too much worried about the implications of the strike. We'll manage our way through it, they said. The District 837 workers assembled the Boeing's F-15 Strike Eagle, the F-18 Super Hornet fighters, the T-7 trainer, and the MQ-25, an aerial refueling drone being developed for the U.S. Navy. Now, they are in the final stages of, I believe, 2027, the last of the F-18 Super Hornets come off the line, the Block 3s they're called. And then they're not being produced anymore. Boeing is shutting that down. And we do not have a replacement jet for the F-18. You know, we had the F-14 Tomcat. The F-18 kind of replaced that as a multi-role fighter. As of right now, we do not have. The F-35 does not have the same capabilities. The stealth fighter is good at what it does. It doesn't have payload capacity. It's not a very good dogfighter. It's good at what it does for its mission capability, over-the-horizon, fifth-generation combat. But we do not have any next multi-role strike fighter. And we should get one real quick because it's going to be an issue. Boeing's defense division is expanding manufacturing facilities in St. Louis area because of the new U.S. Air Force fighter jet, the F-47A, after it won the contract this year. And again, we really don't know what that's going to entail, this F-47A. But that is an Air Force strike fighter. It's not a carrier-based fighter. It does not replace the F-18, which is used by the United States Navy, United States Marine Corps. And there's different variants. Just like these different variants of the F-35. And there's the A, B, and C. The A is the Air Force. The B is the short takeoff Marine Corps variant. And then you have the C, which is the carrier base, which both Marines and the Navy utilizes. And again, different types of roles. The District 751 strike ended with approval of a four-year contract that included a 38% wage increase. So they're turning around a 40% wage increase here. But again, they do important work. There is not a lot of them. We do need to tool up these types of factories. So we'll see how long this lasts because it could be detrimental to national security. So we'll see. Boeing doesn't seem too concerned, but of course they wouldn't project that they were too concerned. Again, the thing is, if something big ever happens, if we are ever in a major conflict, we just do not have the replacement capacity, either for planes or pilots. If you look at World War II, we were putting pilots through flight school in months. It takes a year and a half to 2 years to get pilots through flight school now with the advanced avionics. We do not have simplified aircraft. They were making more simple, mass-produced, powerful aircraft in World War II that were easy to train, were easier to fly, and we could replace them as we lost them, which we did do every mission. You know, this last Truman strike group where they lost two. Actually, three. They lost three F-18s. One was shot down by friendly fire. One they lost control of in the hangar bay during evasive maneuvers. And the other one, the wire broke as it was landing, and they had to eject. Talking $100-something million aircraft times three. Still waiting for them all to be replaced. That's how backed up we are. So any delay in that production line is detrimental. And again, as we look forward, and it's why I had a special on this, where do we go if we're called? We cannot, any major conflict, I say time and time again, we'll need a draft because we just do not have the replacement power that we've had in past wars to do the things on a large scale. And we've seen to where, look at Russia-Ukraine. It is, for the most part, an up-close and personal war. It has not been long distance. I mean, you have some drone activity and such like that, but it's mostly been on both sides replacing bodies on the front lines. And when you get to anything with the adversaries that we would face, China, North Korea, I don't think Iran's going to be much of an issue. I think we've already proven that. If we start losing aircraft, if we start losing pilots, if we start losing personnel in these classifications, there is no conveyor belt to get them back out. And I know that sounds cold, and having, you know, being a father of one of those pilots, it's not something I like to think about. But as a nation, we need to think about it. As a nation, we need to realize that we are not prepared to tool ourselves to be a full war machine. Hopefully it doesn't come to it. But you have saber rattling everywhere and people wanting to test that everywhere. You know, you just had a mini standoff with Russia where they made threats and the president said, oh, I'm going to relocate two nuclear submarines off your coast just to keep you in check. And it appears now, thankfully, they've backed off that rhetoric after they gave a warning saying you don't want to do that. Now they've kind of taken their foot off the throttle a little bit, which then allows us to take our foot off the throttle. That's that whole mutual destruction thing. But hopefully the guys at Boeing, District 838, you know, come to some agreement and get back on the line where I know they want to be, and I know we need them to be, because they need to kink these aircraft back out on the flight decks. It is 5:56 here at WILK. We'll be back to close out the show in just a minute. Well, that's it for the Rob O'Donnell Show today on this Tuesday, August 5th, 2025. That means tomorrow's Wednesday hump day, and we'll get through it. And we should have some special guests in the studio tomorrow. I'll talk about a little bit more, hopefully tomorrow, but due to logistics, still trying to nail it down, but I'm trying to bring you the best in news talk radio here on WILK. So make sure you tune in tomorrow. You're not going to want to miss it. Cedar Point is the amusement park up on Lake Erie that I was talking about. Somebody says Lakeland Orchard up in Scott Township is our local amusement park. Yes, it is. Other than that, we will see you tomorrow. God bless. Be safe. And I will talk to you then.